Exactly a century ago, the whole idea of Europe as a center of power and culture, wealth and enlightenment seemed indestructible. The Europe before World War I was the pinnacle of civilization, but after the Great War, it was a technological marvel betrayed by its own military madness. And at the center of it all was an author, Stefan Zweig, whose popularity in his day was second to none, who made it his personal mission to explain and make sense of what happened in 1914 when World War I broke out. He wrote scores of books, hundreds of essays, poems, but believed in the end that he had failed. And he and his wife committed suicide in 1941 as war was breaking out across the world once again. In George Prochnick's new book, The Impossible Exile, Stefan Zweig and the End of the World, Prochnick tells the story of a man who felt history so deeply and whose very bones were made of an old Europe that was being swept away.
Critically, Zweig was born into a quite affluent family, a very affluent family. His father belonged to, at this point, almost a dynasty of bankers and textile industrialists, and lived at the heart of Vienna in the inner ring, in a world where the bourgeoisie, and particularly relevant to the Jewish bourgeoisie, at this point had risen up, come from the East in many instances, and they felt that all of the liberal, relatively liberal politics that at this point dominated Austria in the last years before the First World War, that this was something irreversible. Everything was unbelievably bureaucratic and unbelievably carefully structured in this Austria, at least for those who were enfranchised economically. And of course, this is something that Zweig addresses later, is how there were problems seething always beneath the surface that were not so apparent, in that Vienna for so long had been a haven for different ethnicities. And Zweig writes with enormous love of the way that the city could manage to hold together in some kind of relative calm Czechs and Slavs from different parts of the East. And he said just living with this enormously diverse polyglot population helped to cultivate the tolerance and freedom from prejudices and even freedom from nationalism that was so important as a resistance to the forces that would ultimately undermine the whole project of cosmopolitanism.
It's some of the most profound and eloquent defense of the idea of diversity. And when we talk about diversity so much in the United States today, it is a diversity that protects thought, that protects freedom of thought, that protects a high-mindedness. It's not really about equality of opportunity. It's about, wow, we are greater than the sum of our parts in our ability to live together. And there's so many other things that he describes of the Vienna of that time that make me kind of crazy, where he describes that you could have an insurance policy. You could create this income pension kind of program that meant you never had to worry economically. And all of this stuff was about to be blown away by the First World War. And he describes a sense of security that we have here in the United States right now.
That's right. And I think all of that is eloquently put. And focusing on the importance of a personal inner freedom is completely correct. And Zweig actually, at one point early on in the memoir, says that this was the most important thing that his own father bequeathed to him, was an absolute devotion to the principle of inner freedom and a determination to preserve it at all costs. And this is something that Zweig carries with him to the end. And in fact, in his final formal suicide note to the world, as it were, he talks about how the two highest values of his entire existence have been personal freedom and intellectual labor, that the joy of intellectual labor and the elevated state that comes from personal freedom were the reasons really that life had value for him, and feeling those no longer part of his life is the implicit reason that he sees it as time to retire from the world.
How popular was he as an author internationally?
I think it's almost impossible to come up with a parallel today, because he was not only an extraordinary bestseller in every genre that he wrote in, histories and biographies and, of course, the novellas and the one completed novel that he wrote, but also his articles. He wrote hundreds of articles. He wrote libretti, and he wrote plays, and he wrote poetry, and it was as though he had a kind of Midas touch. And to his own amazement, Zweig was always very appealingly humble about the quality of his own work, but he wrote something and it would appear and immediately be embraced. At one point, he wrote a very interesting series of what he described as historical miniatures, these studies of poignant moments where history was jolted. It was a kind of idea that really resonated for Zweig, that one moment could change the fate of millions.
Did he believe that intellectually he could explain or redeem the Europe that was so devastated by the Great War?
He was dedicated to trying, and he made a very interesting remark to the French pacifist writer Romain Rolland, also a biographer, immediately after the First World War. He said, "I have no interest in being a literary celebrity. My aspiration is to be a moral authority." And in the immediate aftermath of the war, he really set out, through kind of salon-like meetings with young authors and through lecturing, etc., to cultivate among the next generation faith in and determination to realize the ideal of a united Europe. And when he began to recognize that it wasn't going to happen, this was really what set him on the course to the end.
I hear it today as a warning that things can go wrong so quickly. Beware of what can happen and be certain of what you value more than anything, and that that's your guide to a difficult moment in history. And it rings so true.
That's really what the memoir is dedicated, is to that point. I mean, the introduction is explicitly devoted to articulating shock, the shock that this supranational culture that he lived in Vienna, which had promulgated so many values, which today in the United States we at least ostensibly cherish, how rapidly it could all collapse. And it's important to note that Austria was a slightly different case than Germany in this regard, because after Hitler's appointment to the chancellorship, there was a gradual process of the laws getting darker and darker and the actions getting more and more heinous, even though people realized by the time Hitler was in power that this was a big problem. But in Austria, because the Anschluss, when Hitler came in 1938, happened overnight, there were many people who were present in Germany for the transition who said it was nothing like what happened in Austria. The brutality that was unleashed in 24 hours was something described as out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting.
George Prochnik is the author of The Impossible Exile, Stefan Zweig at the End of the World. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
Later this month, as we mark the 100th year since the start of World War I, George Prochnik will speak about Stefan Zweig's deep personal conflict about Germany and preserving its culture, and how it nearly blinded him to the horrors of Adolf Hitler.